And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
Hey, Frank, a little birdie told me you don't need a satellite dish to get DirecTV.
What's little birdie?
Was it Jimmy the Sparrow?
It's a figure of speech. Point is, you can stream DirecTV over the internet now.
Oh, sure. Next you're going to tell me those big birds are made of metal and filled with people, right?
You mean airplanes?
Stream DirecTV without a satellite dish. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Terms or restrictions apply.
The Athletic.
Excellent Evans equals Jaguar Jakarta Jubilee Joy. Bring out the bunting for Vernon Mortara. The celebrations fall flat for reigning champ De Vries as DNF dents his defence. All this and more in the Race, Formula E podcast, Jakarta Edition. Hello, I'm Andrew Vandenberg, and welcome to the latest version of our show. Joining me, as always, is the race resident Formula E expert, Sam Smith, who managed to avoid the inevitable hot mess that Jakarta would have made of him, and our special guest, who endured the Indonesian heat, Venturi team principal, Jerome D'Ambrosio. Hi, Jerome. Welcome back to the show.
Hello. Thank you for having me.
Jerome, you were there this weekend at Formula E's latest venue. From the TV pictures, it looked like a great event, a good track and a really decent crowd. I think you've been to all the venues that Formula E has raced at. What did you make of it?
It was a great event. It wasn't a decent crowd. It was a great crowd. We had great fans, very warm welcome from the whole from everybody in Indonesia. And the track was great, offered a great racing, which is what we want. And very excited about that first edition of the Jakarta Hippodrome.
Now, Sam, for a new track in a new country, things seem to go very smoothly. But more importantly, we had a good race. So I think it's pretty clear to say now that we have a clear picture on who the genuine title contenders are.
Yeah, I think so. I think actually one started to emerge really from Berlin, the Berlin doubleheader. We're seeing what I'm calling the Gang of Four, which is Van Dorn, Vern, Evans and Rocket Venturi's Eduardo Mortara. They're consistently at the front. Three of those four were in the top five again in Indonesia. So although others could still come into play, I think one of those four will be champion this year. For the narrative of the championship, it's I think a very different proposition, obviously, to last summer. You know, when we had, I think it was up to a dozen up for the crown, didn't we, heading into Berlin. We know that the reasons are mainly due to the clearer dual system knockout formula that they've come up with for qualifying this year. But we're also in the final season of a rule set, remember. So there's a more defined hierarchy, which I think is a natural part of what we're seeing this year. And I think a more enjoyable one. I think it's all the better for it. It gives a structure to the story of the season. We've said it several times on the show, haven't we? But I think one season like 2021 is okay. You can get away with that. But otherwise, you know, if that continued, you get such an abstract picture and really you want something a bit more structured so fans can choose their favourites and the PR people can ramp up the fervour for giving a narrative to the championship. Of those four, I think as it stands, each have attributes that can clinch the title. We've talked a bit about Evans's qualities in the past. You've got Mortara's adeptness at just the way that he drives that Venturi Mercedes. Vern's consistency in bagging big points is exceptional this season. And Van Dorn, of course, who I think if he can cut out the odd mistake, which he's making in qualifying, and he made another one in Jakarta, he could be the favourite as it stands at the moment. But as I said, I think there are three others who can do it. And isn't it interesting that all four of those championship protagonists are all sorted for drives for 23? You know, Evans, Vern and Van Dorn, those two will be at the new DS Penske Alliance. They're all sorted. We're presuming that Edo is going to be staying on when Venturi morphs into Maserati next season. So, you know, I don't know. Does that play a part in ensuring the consistency and the performance of those four who were sort of a little breakaway gang of four, as I mentioned, it could do. I think, you know, at the very least, it's a good psychological state to be in, isn't it?
So Jerome, as Sam mentioned, third place Redo keeps him right in the thick of that title fight. But it looked like he had the pace to win that one. So was third ultimately a bit disappointing?
Absolutely not. I mean, absolutely not. It was, to your last point, was it disappointing? It was a great performance for the team. Great performance by Edo. And I think Edo had the pace to win, but so did Jev and so did Evans. And it was just so close. You had moments in the race when one pushed a little bit more than the others and so on. And so there was a bit of a, you know, they took gaps at times, but in the end, on the finish line, they were all very close to one another. So absolutely not disappointed by the third place. Informally, in a championship like this, you just have to score points, and you have to, when you have an opportunity to be on the podium, to be fighting at the front, you have to make sure that you realize that opportunity and that you bring the points home. So that's what Edo did. He did another great quali, and finishing third is a great result.
He's having a fantastic season, isn't he? He appears to be really maturing into a driver in Formula E now. Why do you think that is?
I think it's. You know, from the outside, we like to look at, take shortcuts and try to find a silver bullet and the single reason why a driver and a team are finding performance. In the end, I think it's a combination of things. He's been with the team for a long time. He's very well gelled in the team. He knows us. We know him. He knows the car. He's at ease with it, as I think everybody can see, especially in quali. The last three qualies, he's pulled some special laps, and that shows confidence in his car, and knowledge in the car. And so I think it's a mixture of things, but yeah, definitely the team and him are in a great place. He's got a good teammate also with Lucas, who's pushing him as well. And in free practice, they both learn from one another. And I think we have a very positive dynamic. So, I think we're in a good place. There's another six races to go. So again, it's Formula E. We'll take it race by race. But at the moment, we're enjoying the form that we're having. And again, we'll just focus on one race at a time.
Sam, let's talk a bit about race winner Mitch Evans. Another charging drive from him. He's really making a habit of making these passes for the win, isn't he?
Yes, he is. I think he and Jaguar TCS bounced back really well after a pretty ordinary Berlin last month, and he drove a brilliant race, as Jerome said, as did all three of the podium. What I thought was really impressive was the way he managed his tyres in those final laps. I've spoken to a few people since last Saturday, and although the fears of massive degradation were kind of largely unfounded, there were certainly some major conditioning by the drivers needed, let's say. I mean, the surface actually was, I think, quite surprising in that it was ultra high grip. Is that right, Jerome? I mean, the grip levels were probably the grippiest we've seen this season. Is that fair to say?
I think it was grippy. It wasn't, I don't think it was much higher. I mean, we've seen high grips in some instance this season. But I think what was really the challenging part in terms of grip was that you had a lot of grip on the line, but as soon as you got a bit offline, that got much more trickier. So it was a high grip track, but I would say I'd put it, you know, close to the Berlin type circuit.
Yeah, you know, Evans coped really well. He resisted that last bit of pressure from Verne's DS car. I think fair play to him. I think when you have a tough race, I think the difference between Mitch Evans this season to previous seasons is, I think there is a psychological element there. You know, when he had a poor race in Mexico City, and actually had one point, didn't he, from the first three races, there was no panic. You know, he just knuckled down, drilled down into the details with the team and came back punching pretty strongly. I think in terms of getting into that position for the victory, he can do that pretty consistently. The dominance in Rome, the speed and quality in the race in Monaco and then Jakarta. You know, he's not had quite the consistency of Werner Montara, but his peaks have been, you know, there's been a big spike in the peaks. He's always been a very hungry driver, and he's always been mega at, especially carrying minimum corner speed, which is crucial in Formula E. I think this technique, which the top drivers are, you know, there's very fine margins between them, but Evans especially, whenever the rare chances I get to go on track to see the guys in action, you know, you can tell actually coming off the brakes and carrying that speed into the slow speed stuff is there. You see it visibly, it's you know you can actually see it occurring in places like the stadium in Mexico especially. I remember watching with Dario Franchitti there a couple of seasons ago, and we both said it at the same time, you know, one of those moments where you sort of say, blimey, Mitch is good carrying the speed through there. So we've got Marrakesh and New York coming up, obviously very different tracks. He especially has been exceptional there in the past, particularly in 2020, when he did a superb sort of top gear from the rear number, coming through and getting points when he was way down the field. And in the Big Apple, he's got one giant ghost to put to rest, hasn't he, after the mistake he made last July, which arguably cost him the title. So the motivation's there. He's definitely, you know, as I said it again with those four, I think he's in a very, very good position. But he, you know, he's been in good positions before. The difference this year, this season, is I think he's a bit more in charge of his own destiny without the randomness of last year. And obviously then the team knowing the car and he knowing the car inside out. So yeah, I think he's got some great momentum behind him.
Jerome, as Sam mentioned, the consistency of Jean-Éric Vergne there, he got another pole position to extend his already series record and a really solid second place. He's genuinely rediscovered his form this season, hasn't he?
Yeah, I mean, it's, you know, as I said earlier on, from the outside, we're always trying to understand why a driver, you know, one season is just consistent performing and so on, and why another season he may appear not to be, and the difference in achieving that consistency and that constant, you know, level of performance, it's marginal. It's on details, and it seemed like Jeff, you know, is managing to put it together this year, like Edo's doing, like Stoffel is doing, like all the ones that we've mentioned, and yeah, to understand why it's difficult from the outside, you would have to ask him why. And yes, they're the only one that knows about that, but definitely he's been extremely consistent. He hasn't won a race yet, I think, but he's there. He's been a few times second. He's been a lot of times on the podium, and he'll be a tough competitor for us.
Sam, that second place for Jev, fourth place for Da Costa, a front row lockout for Diesta Cheetah. How can a team that can achieve this, as well as being a double teams champion, be facing the possibility of not being in the championship next year?
Yeah, it's a good question. Before I answer it, just picking up from what Jerome said there, I don't want to go heavy on the whole psychological thing, but Vern, you know, speaking to people in the team, Vern is in his happiest place that he's been in since he's been a Formula E driver. You know, everyone knows the story about him coming into Formula E in 2014. He got that pole at Punta del Este, didn't he? But it was a very tumultuous time for him leaving F1. You know, he'd gone through the tragedy of his good friend, Jules Bianchi, and his accident. It was a very difficult time for him. Since then, it's been, you know, it's been real peaks and troughs. I mean, major, major peaks with the championships, of course, and he is one of the top performers in Formula E, no doubt. But on the odd occasion, he's gone down into a trough again, and, you know, that comes across as he's quite an emotional guy from the radio, as it does often with drivers during the heat of battle. But I think what's interesting for me is, you know, even in Berlin, I was stalking a couple of guys from DS and talking to them at the back of the pits. I had to do a double take. You know, Jev was helping the team disassemble the garage. Now, you know, that a few drivers do that. You know, they don't all just scarper off to the airport and to the lounge or whatever. You know, plenty of drivers get their hands dirty. But it's the first time I've ever seen Vern doing that, and he was doing it with a smile on his face. You know, he's got a really settled personal life now, and things that are going on there. Again, I'm sure that all constitutes a more efficient, constructive professional behind the wheel. But going back to your question, yeah, we've covered that, haven't we? Dieste Cheetah for the last year or so. It's not been a happy place off the track. And the astonishing situation is that, you know, going back to Berlin in 2020, Da Costa was winning the title, but like his teammate as well, you know, that allegedly they were waiting for paychecks. You know, that's their own business, but naturally it's going to have a big issue on the track. Amazing, really. And then it all kind of came to a head last September when the planned investment from a Canadian source didn't materialize. And now DS are going to another alliance with Penske. So ultimately, it's hard to quantify how such a successful team finds itself where it is at the moment. But that's this crazy sport sometimes, isn't it? You know, it's complicated. And that sure is one complicated situation, which is still ongoing. Hopefully, it can continue. But really, it can go either way right now, I think. That could be one crazy headline. But here's another one. What if Vern won the championship this year without taking a race win? It could happen. I mean, we're over halfway through the season, aren't we, at the moment? And he hasn't won a race, but he's, you know, he's on the coattails of Van Dorn at the
new Tom Sneever.
Well, I was just going to say to you, is that the only one I
can think of.
Yeah, so Keke Rosberg obviously won the 82 title by winning one race in F1, and Tom Sneever is, I think, the only champion to ever win a major international series without a win. Right? I mean, it's got to be. You stole my thunder there a bit, VDB. Thanks for that.
Sorry, we are straying into dangerously nerdy territory here.
We are.
1980 yeah. USAC champion?
I think it was, yeah. I think it was 80, yeah. I mean, let's get back to it. On Da Costa, again, obviously an integral part of that team. He's been there or thereabouts this season, but just hasn't had the same sort of clinical execution of races that he had in 20 and 21, to my mind. I don't think it's a straight situation of Antonia's head been turned by his soon-to-be-announced move to Porsche. You know, I say that because he's a super-focused professional race driver, and behind the genial nature of Antonia, there's a real hard taskmaster there. You know, he's not a soft touch just because he's a nice, engaging fella. You know, he wants to win and he wants to drive his team on, but it's obviously been difficult for the past year, as we both mentioned. You know, he's had struggles with braking this year, and that seemed to come back and bite him a bit as well in Jakarta. It will be interesting to see if he now becomes a complete support to Vern's title push. You know, I don't know how they can work that. I think it's extremely difficult to do in Formula E to switch that sort of that forethought to supporting a driver. But, you know, I'm sure that will happen sooner or later because of the points discrepancy between them.
Now, fifth place for Stoffel Vandoorne keeps him at the head of the points. Ventura is obviously a customer of Mercedes. How does that relationship work? And should it come down to a head-to-head between the two of you, are you actually allowed to fight them for the championship?
Absolutely. I mean, you know, we have a great relationship with Mercedes. Obviously, the powertrain they're providing us with is exceptional. It allows us to fight at the front. And, you know, to answer your question, you have to look at last year. I mean, Edo finished second, Nick finished first. We went into the last race. We could have won that championship. We are two teams working together, but when it comes to being on the track, our drivers are trying their best, and so are our engineers. They are trying their best and fight to try to win it. So, for sure, we're allowed to do that. And in the background, we're working closely to make sure that we give the four cars the best chance to fight at the front.
Sam, it was a solid sixth for Jake Dennis, who's having a really strong season for Andretti. But in the sister car, it's really not working out for Oliver Askew, is it?
Yeah, I mean, apart from the gang of four, and maybe Frines and sporadically De Vries, I think Dennis has been, you know, the other standout driver this year again, really. You know, the hopes seem to have spiked, though, sadly, in De Rier and then got spectacularly punctured in the next few, four or five races, really. But, you know, even when he's not had the capability to get a result, he's still been quick, as we saw in Rome and as we saw in Jakarta, although he got some good points with six, but wasn't able to be right at the front as he was in De Rier in that first race. Oliver Askew, yeah, I mean, started well, got those points in De Rier, but since then has struggled quite a bit. There's been a few mistakes in there. I mean, if you were giving him the benefit of the doubt, you'd say that the bumper year for rookies was last year, when the qualifying format enabled overall better results. You know, you could you get better track conditions and you could build a race from being in group three and four, really. We saw his teammate winning two races last season, and also, as Jerome knows full well, Norman Nato did a pretty good job as well as a rookie. Cassidy got a couple of poles as well, didn't he? I mean, coming in the final season of a rule set too isn't easy. You know, everyone else has got so much more knowledge than he had. He's always going to be on the back foot to some degree. And at the end of the day, you still have to perform though, don't you? So it's not that he's been completely off it, but he needs to get some points in the final half of the season, that's for sure. I think that's just clear. It's a difficult season for Andretti, but they've got an interesting future with Porsche. So if Askew can, if he can get a bunch of points, you never know. But part of me thinks it might be already a bit too late anyway for him, and he won't be part of the Gen 3 Formula E scene, and that Andretti will probably go for some more experience in 2023.
Lucas Degrassi took seventh in your second car, Jerome. His race base has been really strong this season, but is it fair to say he's just fallen a little bit short in qualifying?
I mean, it's qualifying this year is just so close. I think this race, another 21 or 22 hundredths of a second would have put him into the duels. It's extremely tight. And, Lucas is the first year with the team. He's getting to know, compared to Edo and to Nick and Stoffel, he's coming into a new environment with a new car. And it's really in qualifying when you need to go get those last few hundredths of a seconds that hurts the most. I think he's been performing really well for us. If you look at Berlin, his qualifying was good. He got really unlucky in the first race with a puncture. He got fourth in the second race. Here he made up as many positions as anyone else in the top 10. So I think he's there, like you say. You're right. In race pace, he's very, very strong, and in qualifying, he's trying to work to put it all together to go get those last few hundreds of a second. But again, I think it's one of the championship where it's perhaps the harder to do so because of how close everyone is in qualifying over one lap, and that's where I think also the cars, there's a little bit less difference between the teams and the cars. But you know, we've got another six races. He's done some really good qualifying as well this year, and he's got the speed in the race. So I'm sure he's gonna fight at the front as well.
What do you make of Lucas's fasting, Jerome?
Oh yeah, here he's doing 50-hour fast.
He's doing a 50-hour right? fast. He's not eating for 50 hours. Is this punishment for something, or is it his own accord?
I it's fantastic that you learn things about your drivers that even, you know, that I didn't know. I'm glad I got on that podcast. I'm gonna ask Lucas, what's the 50 hours fasting? I don't know. I mean, you wouldn't want me on a 50 hours fasting. That's for sure. I'll ask him.
Proper hangry.
I'll get hangry for sure.
I was going to ask, like, Lucas is the original Formula E driver, Jerome. Obviously, you know, testing the car when it was back in its Formula Lek version. Behind the scenes, how much impact has he had at the team?
Well, he works really well with the team. He's got a lot of experience, and so does Edo. And I think for a Formula E team, even, you know, to your point, the cars are in the last year of a generation, but there's so much work going in the background that we're still working and we're still evolving, and on its marginal gains from race to races, and his experience and his interest in the technical side of things has also provided us with a lot of things to work on, and as I say, him together with Edo, that's something that really helps the team. Obviously, there's so much we can do as a customer team, but there's still a lot that can make small differences. So, he's been working hard with us on that.
Looking for an assist with your credit card, but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
Hey, Frank, a little birdie told me you don't need a satellite dish to get DirecTV.
What's the little birdie?
Was it Jimmy the Sparrow?
It's a figure of speech. Point is, you can stream DirecTV over the internet now.
Oh, sure. Next you're going to tell me those big birds are made of metal and filled with people, right?
You mean airplanes?
Stream DirecTV without a satellite dish. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Terms or restrictions apply.
It was another underwhelming race for Porsche, with only a P8 for Pascal Wehrlein to celebrate. Sam, can we officially discount them from the championship now?
You never say never, especially in Formula E, but Porsche aren't in the top three consistently in the quickest packages out there. Yes, the car's quick in qualifying and race. And yes, they have two great drivers capable of winning. And personally, I think I probably speak for most people in the paddock, I'd love to see Andre Lotterer win with Porsche before going elsewhere in 2023. That would be the good news story of the year, definitely. But I think they can get another win this season, but that's probably about it. I'm pretty sure they won't win any titles until Gen 3. There have just been too many squandered chances. I think for Wehrlein, obviously, Monaco, if he'd have won that race, he'd have been fourth in the standings. And then who knows? I mean, all of a sudden, there's all kinds of momentum and things that can come of that. And actually, the legacy of the issue was felt in Jakarta, because it was initially traced to the auxiliary battery, and the DC-DC converter had to be worked on before Jakarta handed Wehrlein a five-place grid penalty. And he did well, actually, to make up for that and get some points last Saturday. Lotterer got pinged for contact with De Vries and lost points himself. Didn't get any, in fact, went down to 11th. And he is 61 now behind Van Dorn. Porsche is 72 behind Mercedes in the team's title race. I mean, yeah, it's mathematically possible they can get back into it, but I just think it's probably too much. So I think you have to say any title aspirations are, they have to look forward to 23. They're testing the Gen 3 development car in a couple of weeks' time over in Spain. I think there's going to be an enormous focus from Porsche, as there is all the manufacturers, in getting that Gen 3 car right. So I think, Porsche have probably got at least one eye on Gen 3 rather than any notions of getting back into the title fight this season.
Rounding out the points finishers, we had Sam Bird in ninth for Jaguar and Sebastian Buemi 10th. A decent qualifying for Buemi, starting in sixth, Sam. So what happened in the race?
Well, he did what Van Dorn did and missed the attack boost loop, unfortunately. Quite why he did that, I'm not sure. I think, actually, Jerome probably did the track walk and obviously, has downloaded the drivers. It seemed quite tricky, the attack loop at that corner. Was it T16, Jerome? It looked a little bit more difficult than some of the tracks. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, I didn't do the track wall. I can't do them anymore. I mean, I was in an air-conditioned room with the other TPs for the Fatima meeting at that time. But no, you're right, actually. It was tricky for whatever reason, difficult to understand why. But I think the first loop was a little bit tricky to see for the drivers, because we had Edo actually in free practice one, twice missing it. And actually complaining about it, that it was actually quite tricky. So, yeah, it's part of Formula E. It's a small mistake. Having said that, Stoffel still did really well to recover and to end up the race in P5. And arguably, if he would have gotten ahead of Antonio, who didn't have a strong pace in the second part of the race, I think would have been quite close to Edo. So, it's important. But obviously, if you make one mistake, and in the case of Seb, if you make one mistake, but you have the pace, you've got an opportunity to come back and still get some good points. If you make one mistake and the pace isn't there, it's just exponential. And I guess that was the case for Sebastian this race.
So Buemi was strong at the weekend. I mean, the Nissan, we know the limitations of the Nissan. You know, they've had issues with that particular model since it debuted at Monaco last year. But there are, you know, on certain circuits, it can be top 10, as Sebastian proved. He did outpace Gunter last weekend pretty conclusively. Again, it'll be interesting to see how the rest of the season develops for another driver, Buemi, who we know is exiting his team and heading somewhere new, in Seb's case, to Envision. He's had a tough couple of seasons. So a bit like Lotterer, I guess, if he can get a result for Nissan in the final races, albeit I think a podium is probably out of reach. I think, again, it'll be a nice story because he's leaving a team he's been an integral part of since 2014. I mean, that's a hell of a long time for any driver to be with the same team in international motorsport. So that'd be a, you know, feel good story. But, you know, part of me thinks that, again, because of the limitations of that car, I think Seb's definitely going to miss the team, and he'll miss the relationships he's built with that team. But, you know, he's certainly not going to miss this car and the frustrations it's brought to him and his teammates over the last couple of seasons.
Talking of team relationships, Jerome, it's been a tough season for a couple of your former teams, Mahindra and Dragon, both of whom didn't score points at the weekend. And how much sympathy do you have for your former colleagues at those outfits?
Well, I mean, obviously, there's two sides, I think, to this. The first one is, I mean, we're competitors, and there's always going to be a winner and a loser, and that's part of the game. And we're all, you know, within that game, knowing what's at stake, and that in the end, we need to, that performance and performing is what we're all trying to aim for. Having said that, obviously we all know, regardless whether you win or you lose, how much effort is going into trying to win and trying to be at the front, and that's valid for every team. And so, you know, obviously sympathy is a strong word, because it's, again, I'm competing. If it's not us, it's them, and vice versa. And so. That's part of the game, but you know that, you know, if you don't achieve results, it's difficult for the guys, because the guys, you know, the engineers, the mechanics, you know, everyone in a team, they're in the end, they're doing their job. Sometimes they're doing it really well, and the results just don't come for other reasons. And in that case, it's not easy. But again, I think it's part of the game, and everybody in the sport knows what the game is about.
Absolutely. And talking of knowing what the game's about, Sam, you wrote a very forthright article on the-race.com critiquing Antonio Giovinazzi's season to date. It's fair to say it was another disappointing, or maybe even a disaster in Jakarta. What's going on there, and is he going to make it to the end of the season?
Yeah, good questions. I mean, it's a messy one, isn't it? He had an incident with teammate Sergio Sete Câmara and spun, and then he went off in qualifying as well. Difficult weekend for Giovinazzi again. What I wrote prior to Jakarta was really just, I suppose, questioning the move of going to Dragon Penske for this season. I think we and a lot of people did the same last November when it was announced. You know, don't get me wrong. I mean, somebody coming from Formula One with his name, and he's a quality driver as he is, he's good for the championship. But if he's, you know, if he's at the back and he's not getting results, and he is potentially damaging his own reputation by doing that, then I don't think it's good for anyone. So henceforth, the question of why he's there. I think initially, the assumption was that he was doing it with something bigger and better in mind, whether that was with the new alliance with DS Penske for 23 or elsewhere. We now know that, you know, he's not going to be at that team. For 23. So therefore, returning to the question, why is he racing this season? So the assumption is that he didn't have any other options, and he just wanted to go racing, which is fair enough. And you know, potentially he was seeing where it could lead, and if he could turn heads this season. He hasn't done that, and I think now, as I said, I think it's close to sort of tarnishing his reputation, which, you know, no one's questioning his skill as a driver, and he clearly isn't able to exploit that skill in this car. And it is the second year of the homologation and all those things we've talked about. But again, at the very least, you know, he should be nibbling at his teammate. And he had a nibble at Jakarta, didn't he? And it went wrong. But I think he's, will he make the end of the season? I'm sure he will. You know, there's a contract, and you know, why wouldn't he now? You know, he's done half the season. He may as well go all out and try and salvage something from it. Could a sabbatical have been a better prospect for his career? Yeah, that's for him to answer, isn't it? I think personally, it probably would have been, rather than doing what he's doing now. I think he's probably going to be part of the Ferrari hypercar program in 2023 in WEC and at Le Mans, and maybe this slightly bizarre season with Dragon Penske is just a footnote in his career before he reestablishes himself with a manufacturer and continues his Ferrari adventure. So yeah, it's a curious one. I honestly don't really get it, but again, you know, I'm sure from his point of view, whenever I've spoken to him, you know, he's keeping his motivation, and the key point to make is the team love him. You know, he's really popular in the team, and the motivation still seems to be there if the results aren't. So, I guess he's just going to keep pushing on.
Well, I think that covers all the major incidents from what was a really successful opening out into Jakarta. Jerome, do you think this will establish itself as a place on the calendar now? Are you looking forward to going back next year?
Yeah, absolutely. I think, as I said in the very beginning, the track is great. The crowd was fantastic. The grid was actually so busy. And it's nice. You feel in you know, when you're welcome and when people, you know, want to have you there and want to see the race. And that was the case. So hopefully this will be the first one of many more.
Now we move on to a track that's had an on and off relationship with formerly the David Fairclough, Sam, of formerly Heat Tracks. That's one for the kids there. The Gen Zs are all over that one. So it's Marrakesh. It's going to be another scorcher. I don't think we've ever raced on it this late into the year. So do we think it'll be more of the same in terms of the competitive order? What's your prediction, Jerome?
Oh, it's difficult to say. I think you've had some teams that have been pretty much up there on every circuit so far, and so we'll see, but I expect them to be there as well. It's so close, we'll have to see there. I think it's going to be a bit different than Jakarta. I mean, it's going to be very warm but much less humid, and let's see how that impacts all the temperature management aspect of things. Jakarta in the second part of the race, we had a little bit of the temperatures went down a little bit, which was not necessarily expected. I mean, relatively down. It was still very, very hot. But as you can imagine with us, when it comes to management of all the systems, we're speaking of, you know, when you say the temperature went down from 1 degree or 1.5 degrees, that has an impact on what we do. So let's see. I think it's going to be very warm. It's going to be different than what we've seen when we go racing there in January and February. I think they will adapt a little bit the schedule to try to you know, not to be on track when it's really scorching hot, but in the end it will. So it'll be another challenge. I think New York will be the same. And yeah, I think we're, apart from London, we should be the next one with, you know, hopefully will be decent temperature. The coming races are going to be very warm.
Yeah, absolutely. Sam, you're going to pack plenty of Factor 50 for that one, I'm assuming. What do you expect to happen?
Yeah, I've got a deal with Hawaiian Tropic, actually, for Factor 350 for that weekend. I agree with everything Jerome has said. I think a different angle is, even though it is a, let's call it a semi-permanent facility, it's an amazing job that Formula E are going to have to do to get that, to get everything ready for that race. I mean, I think it was only, 8 weeks grace that it got when it replaced Vancouver. So yeah, fair play to them for getting it on the calendar with that amount of notice in the first place. It's it ticks off another continent as well. So, you know, Africa's added to the other ones. I think it's the best that Formula E could have done. It's frustrating we're not going to Vancouver, but after that we've got the, you know, these three amazing events. New York's always great fun. London, I think, will be way beyond obviously what it was last year when it was mostly affected by the pandemic. So I expect London to be a really big event this year. And then, you know, having spoken to Mr. Moon, the promoter of the Seoul E-Prix, expecting huge things from this race inside and outside the stadium, the 1988 Olympic Stadium in Seoul. So, you know, there's so much to look forward to for the end of the season. But yeah, Marrakesh it's going to be an evening race. I think it starts at 5 o'clock. I don't know if it's confirmed yet, but it's going to start at 5 o'clock and it should be a little bit cooler. But, you know, early July temperatures are peaking at 41, 42 degrees. So that just direct heat, thankfully without any humidity that Jerome and others experienced in Jakarta, it's still going to be really tough on the thermal management of the batteries. I mean, it's going to be right up there with Santiago in 2019 when basically you and I just melted into two puddles, didn't we, for the weekend V2B. So hopefully the air conditioning is ramped right up in the media center for this one, because I'm gonna have to start charging you danger money, I think, for going to these races.
We'll create a little kitty for you for your rehydration rehab sachets and whatnot. No calendar update, Sam, so you don't get a jingle for the next bit, but any Formula E news we need to cover off?
Well, we've got this period now between Jakarta and Marrakesh where there's 4 weeks. That's going to be filled for the manufacturers with getting on with the track testing of the development cars for Gen 3, which is going to be interesting and exciting. We're not sure how much we're going to see of that private testing happening, but it's going to take place. The Continental teams, which is Porsche, Nissan and another one, DS, are going to be testing on the continent, and the British manufacturers Jaguar, Mahindra and Neo are going to be running in the UK over the next coming week. So it'll be interesting to see how that goes. And as we heard from Alessandra Giliberti and Frederick Bertrand in our last podcast, they're going to be using or testing the infrastructure for fast charging. So that would be really interesting to see how that goes.
Jerome, are you going to go? Are you going to go to the Gen 3 tests? Are you allowed? Or
No. I won't be going. I mean, for us as a team, you know, and it's important to put things into to remind that we're a team, we're a racing team, we're operating at the moment, we're operating the Mercedes powertrain. And so for me, it's of utmost importance that we remain focused on where we can make a difference, and what is our core responsibility in bringing performance, and that is in exploiting a powertrain in a car that we're being given. So this is what we focus on, and at the moment we will remain fully focused until the end of the season on trying to maximize the great opportunity that we have, and then we'll focus on Gen 3 when it will be time to do so.
That makes sense. Sorry to cut you off in your stride there, Sam.
No, we've got an interesting one that's just gone live now when we're talking on Tuesday morning about involving Nissan. Nissan are using the ART GP squad for part of their development of the Gen 3 program. Initially just the testing, or we believe just the testing phase throughout this summer and into the autumn. And we've managed to discover that Theo Pourchaire has done several days independent, let's call it FIA spark testing, with that car, in addition to Benoit Trellier, which I found quite interesting because obviously Theo Pourchaire works for the ART team and is a Formula 2 race winner and is currently runner-up in that championship as it heads, I think it's heading to Baku this weekend. The driver market is in full active swing, as it has been for a couple of months now, and there's a new name that could be tossed into it. I think Nissan, we know for sure, have one seat available. We think the intel we have is that Max Gunter will probably stay there next season, but he is going to have a new teammate and a young charger such as Teo Pourchaire, who may have limited options in, or probably will have limited options in Formula One. I mean, if Oscar Piastri can't get a drive in F1, what chance has Pourchaire got for next season? Probably very slim. Why not come to Formula E? It may be too early in his career, but certainly he is a driver in that mix for a seat next season. So you can read all about that on the site. Additionally, there's going to be a feature on why there probably will be more night races in Formula E next season. We believe that Jakarta is one option to hold a night race next season, as is Berlin. So that's going to be an interesting feature. And the future of our reigning champion, Mr. Nyck de Vries, which is seems to be quite a complicated saga at the minute. He's currently at Le Mans with Toyota, where he's tested reserve driver, anticipated to get an offer of a race seat with Toyota for next season. He's already stated to German media that he will not race for McLaren, which is, remember, taking over the Mercedes EQ team for 2023 and beyond. So will Nyck de Vries stay in Formula E? We think he probably will. We know that he's been speaking to several teams, and we'll just have to wait and see and see if there are any updates. He would be a huge catch for any team, any manufacturer heading forward into Gen 3. Do you agree, Jerome? You reckon he'd be a good catch?
Yeah, I mean, Nyck is obviously a great driver. I think to sum up what you just said, I think is, like you say, the driver's market is in full swing. It's been for several weeks. It's there's a lot of things going on, and for some reason, I think perhaps because of the Gen 3 testing starting now, people are keen to get their lineup sorted before, a bit earlier than what you would normally expect. But at the same time, not everyone has got the information they need to actually make a final decision and go ahead with it. So we'll see. Might be a few surprises left and right, but from our side, we'll definitely communicate on what our plans are whenever we'll be ready to do so. And now is not the case, if that's why you're asking, Sam.
Are you working to a time frame? Do you need to get it done before the season's finished, or do you not feel under that pressure?
Look, obviously the earlier the better, because it's one of these things where it's an important thing. It's an important decision for a team. Understanding which powertrain you will be using, understanding who's going to drive those cars. These are some of the very important partnerships that need to be settled, and that you'd wish they'd be settled. And to a certain extent, it's often still a moving part, but as soon as possible, but at the same time, you can't take a decision when you don't have all the information you need to. So, let's see.
Well, thank you very much, both of you. I think we can all agree that was a platinum performance all round. Jerome, the very best of luck to you and the team for the rest of the season. And Sam, enjoy Le Mans. And good luck in the heat of Marrakesh. I think we'll probably talk before then. Please keep an eye on the-race.com for all the latest Formula E news. As Sam said, we're expecting a few bits and pieces to drop. And please check out the rest of the races podcast notebook, which includes our new F1 tech show with Gary Anderson. Episode 1 is out now and includes a really fascinating in-depth interview with Pirelli's F1's Mario Isola. So please check that out. And goodbye.
Can you just keep the Sam Smith?
The Athletic.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.